Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we're here to help you understand the Constitution. Because the more we understand the Constitution, the easier it is for people to start, dare I say, demanding compliance. Because now you know what they can do and what they can't do. You can't do that. Where's the authority of the Constitution for you to do that? Folks, the most dangerous people in the room when we're talking about our government, when we're talking to our public servants, are those people who understand what limitations they really have. Become that dangerous person. Become the person that can actually say, show me in the Constitution where you have that authority to do what you're doing here. You need to shut this down. And by doing so, they don't have an argument. Argument over. This is one of the reasons why we have to seek public servants who understand that they have limited powers, who understand that they can be held accountable, who are willing to be held accountable and willing to actually operate within those limitations. Are we willing to allow government to be limited? I'm telling you what, those who are getting their handouts, if you haven't noticed, folks, if you want to see the bill on how much you're getting, you know, the conservatives are getting their little stipend, but how much have the left been getting? As a matter of fact, let me ask you this, Sean. Welcome back, by the way.
Good to be here, sir.
How many rich, or how many conservatives have gotten rich, I mean, become millionaires because of the grifting?
A lot of them. Most of the ones that you see that have some kind of prominent platform.
Conservatives?
Yes, sir.
So when I say grifting, from tax dollars.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant grifting.
Yeah. I understand that, but I'm talking about leading. I'm talking about from the corruption of government. I'm trying to create this case that the money that we're paying goes more towards those who are supporting the collapse of our government, and that's why we see the left. Billionaires, or I should say at least millionaires, are coming out. Now, it's not that there hasn't been conservatives, because I can point to Elon Musk. The richest man in the world became the richest man of the world because of our tax dollars, period. Prove me wrong. He would never have created Tesla had there not been whisperings and dealings in establishing, you know, this crappy concept of an electric car, so that he would be subsidized. You understand, folks, he was guaranteed 100% profits. And when I say 100% profits, don't think he didn't elevate those profits. Does that make sense? In other words...
To a certain extent, I agree with that, in the space program and different things like that. But
it really all started with...
I think he's catching a bad rap because of the things that he's brought into the market are so... innovative, that, you know, they're leading the way to the future. I mean, I don't agree with the electric car mandates. It's ridiculous. But as far as the technology that he's developed, I mean, he's about to do some surgeries on a person that was born completely blind at birth, and they're going to have sight again because of his technology. So, I mean, I'm not like trying to take his side or anything, but I'm just saying what you're saying is correct.
It all started before he could have the money to buy. So most people don't even know that he bought technology a while ago because he thought there was a real opportunity, and there is an opportunity. We're starting to see it being applied. There's this. It's a boring technology. And when I say boring, we're talking about underground boring. Mm-hmm. That was one before he started SpaceX. He bought into this, and he went to L.A., and he started, you know, proposing an underground subway system. But the problem was that that was really under the water table and so forth, and it never took, you know, never took traction. But it didn't mean that there weren't all sorts of other awesome applications for that thing. But that was the technology that he bought off of, and now he's making bank off of this because they're building underground or going boring through mountain ranges in what is it, Sweden or Norway, to basically bring ships into, you know, instead of going around the tumultuous Atlantic, going from one little bay, from one little kind of natural harbor to another natural harbor. And it's like a 50-mile or maybe more than that, but it's this massive boring, and they're using his technology throughout the world to do this. And now, actually, but it wasn't his. He bought it. Mergers and acquisitions. I mean, it's one thing if he was, you know, he was actually coming out with all these inventions and patents. He's buying them from other people, but the same thing with SpaceX. And same thing with all of these things. You know, this I want to call it Starnet. That's ours. Or Skylink or Skynet. Yeah. Skynet, whatever. come on! But my point is that it all started with these massive $1 billion that he started making by these guaranteed sales. He never took a loss. Every other car manufacturer out there, other than these few that were anointed to be set up, because that's all he was doing. He was targeting every product that he made for that subsidy. So Ford and everybody else was maintaining the regular product line. They said, well, we got to get into that because, you know, we're throwing away money. Well, he was everything he was selling was eligible for the full subsidies, where Ford and the rest of the company weren't. So the point is that Elon Musk was somebody that absolutely benefited off of the leftist plan, because government should never have done that. They had no authority to give him that money. They had no authority to subsidize corporations or even bail out the TARPs and the insurance companies. All of these corporate welfare, they had no authority to do. But here comes a conservative, supposedly. I don't know if he's conservative or not, because I don't know the man. I don't know if Trump's conservative.
He wasn't until the left went loony.
Okay, so he woke up.
When his son got transed.
Okay. So putting things aside, all I know is that here was somebody that was really, you know, they may have had some money, but they weren't nearly the station that they quickly got to because of our tax dollars. And I'm only using that as, okay, you do have this on the right, where you got your Elon Musk and other people kind of like that. But look at all of the people that became millionaires in Minnesota and all the other Somalians and so forth, because of they all got sucked into this plan that was literally throwing money out, the old Cloud Piven plan. I think I got that right. But the whole point of we're going to throw a whole bunch of tax dollars and we're going to break this system and we're all going to get rich because of it. And there were lots of leftists that have gotten rich. Now, some of these people, they're at risk and they're running around, they're hiding and doing everything they can to hide. Folks, really, when it comes down to it, you may be getting your Social Security. The good, honest Americans that are, you know, they don't want to be a burden. They're not really trying to destroy America. But the programs that they're receiving is at a huge cost. The fact is, you would be better off letting the state and your local communities take care of us instead of this government. Because pennies on the dollar, They're robbing us blind, because they're using this money to actually wage war against us because of its power they're not supposed to have. And they know this. And I think that they also know that their time is short. Time is finite for all of us. I think that that's not profound. I think that's just a common knowledge thing. But the point is that they're running as fast as they can at the best clip they can to destroy us with the time that they have. If we don't let them, then that's great. But look at the cost that they're running, the bill that they're running up. It's all unconstitutional. And the day we start shutting it all down, and because that's where we'll actually find all where all the money went, is the day we shut it all down, we'll find out where all the money went. And unfortunately, there are certain people that will, you know, get away with what they got away with. But there are others who were dubious in basically transferring gold, transferring our riches over to foreign nations, to corporations, and so forth. That will be coming back. That will be coming back because those transfers, even though all the transfers were illegitimate, there's a certain amount of, well, you have to hold the individual accountable. And when you got people, you know, treason, because there's really no, there's no method in the Constitution for reparations, but there is justice. And getting back that money, because once that money's gone, because most of these millionaires, they're gone. It's gone. It's just like people that win the lottery. I mean, how long do they have their riches when they win the lottery? They just burn right through it. It's gone. So what do? We sell their pound of flesh? Okay. But we have to hold those people accountable that were writing the checks, that were making these transactions, that were actually going out and putting forward and acting out these dubious plans. But anyway, I digress. The point is that, folks, what is it going to take? You know, all of us want to see America, all of us want to see America survive. We want to see our liberties restored. You may think that these little benefits you're getting are really important. Have faith in Him. He will feed us with manna if we support and live the true cause of liberty. We have so many resources. We have the ability to do things for ourselves. As many people say, the elixir is far less bitter than allowing this to run its full course. To let the disease continue is ultimate death. We have to use the elixir. The elixir is stopping and holding and ending all of this unconstitutional government stuff. You want to legitimize it? That's another thing. But I'm here to tell you, let me ask you this, because before we get into this, because this is something we had never really talked about, but what is the likelihood of the Second Amendment ever being amended out of the Constitution?
I think it's highly unlikely.
And really, folks, that's because you have to have 38 states to say, we do not want people to, you know, we don't want this right to bear arms to exist anymore. 38 states. Folks, go through the heartland of America. We have way too many states. And if the progressives get their way, what they want to do is they'll make that one big state. And then all of a sudden, the three-fourths rule changes completely to where the population centers can, because if they can start divvying up America based on population like they did your states, then it's game over. They will be able to do it. But the design of the Constitution, based on its design, it cannot happen. They have to attack the design. They have to pervert the design, which is why they did what they did to your states by attacking your counties and setting up legislative districts based on population. This is how they shifted everything towards democracy in your states, and this is how your states are going awry. Anyway, all the truth, all the facts are here. You don't have to believe me. Start reading these things, and you'll start realizing, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And the thing that you, I don't want you to get upset with yourself. Start acting now. Start doing the due diligence now, because the longer you procrastinate, the more, I think, the more disappointed, or the, at least the more frustration, and actually the more we deserve in hearing it from our children and our grandchildren. How come you didn't act sooner? I needed to do this sooner so that, you know, I could have enjoyed the liberties of America instead of just my grandchildren. Those of us who are, you know, in the front, FIFO, right? First in, first out. Those of us who are, you know, on our way out, we should have been doing stuff a long time ago to take all of this stuff back. We should have been doing the due diligence. Every person has the responsibility of doing the due diligence, period. Every person has this moral and legal responsibility to holding government accountable and making sure that they're operating within those bounds. But we we've been told and indoctrinated that we don't have to and that they can do. And so who do you blame? You have to blame yourself. And the sooner you actually start stepping up, doing the due diligence, the happier you will be and the less you'll regret, you know, your procrastination. So anyway, with that, let's get back into the Massachusetts debates and what what Reverend Thatcher was basically saying. He kind of commented over a lot of little different things, but he basically talked about the real need of this energetic government, the ability for a government to do what it needed to do. We have the ability to actually get involved as a government into domestic issues such as transportation, such as infrastructure. Let's just use infrastructure because we kind of talk broadly about this. I know I do. And it is not something for the federal government to do. However, the federal government does have the ability to lay and collect taxes for the needs. So bottom line is, folks, if we want to have a national infrastructure, we need to create a separate entity, which would be a state council. It would not be under the auspices or under any control of the federal government. And then what we would do is we would basically create a single amendment of taxation where the federal government would basically tax based on apportionment or however we want, because we can get rid of the 16th Amendment. We don't need the 16th Amendment. The bottom line is we can start fixing things to where, as the state council, because we want the states to determine what's best for them. We don't want the federal government figuring out how they can position, because they've only proven we can't trust them. So we will tell them on an annual basis what we need for infrastructure projects of bringing high-speed internet to every citizen. And it won't be via, you know, the Skynet or whatever. It will be via landline or, you know, physical networks, point-to-points. And folks, if it's not physical, it's problematic. I'm just telling you. So we're better off running fiber. And actually, Obama, I don't know if you knew this, but Obama got billions of dollars to run fiber optic throughout the United States. And that was a fiasco. Now, there should be some documentation of where they ran and laid that fiber, but most people don't even know it was done. Most people have no idea that there's fiber stretching across their mountain ranges and so forth through their states. But most everybody saw those trucks going through rural America with these big, huge orange spools of fiber where they were laying out fiber that went from one point to the next point and putting hubs and so forth at critical points. So the point is, folks, is that this infrastructure will be paid for by taxation out of the federal government instead of each state having to, you know, get powers or increasing powers for this other government to do that. But the council will dictate what their needs are, but before they can justify those needs need to be justified every time. So the budget must be justified by the states themselves. So we have this full accountability. See, back in the beginning of this nation, we didn't have the communications. We didn't have the ability to be engaged the way the framers really wanted to have the engagement, so that they could reduce, you know, this separation and this isolation of government and working in vacuums and behind, you know, these veils of secrecy, just because that was the nature of life. That was the nature of America at that point in time. We didn't have phones. So anyway, don't worry about how to do this, because we've been blessed with the technology by the divine hand of providence and all sorts of other, I'll just say, innovations to allow us to actually manifest and actualize a true self-governing system that serves us, not the globalist agenda. And I think everybody, there's always going to be somebody that's going to want something for nothing. But I think most people really understand that there's no such thing as a free lunch, that we all have to earn, we all have to contribute, we all have to be a part. And that starts pointing us towards enlightenment. That's where we start getting discipline, and we actually start helping everybody become contributors and become full contributors to the fullest capacity they possibly can. We want to encourage full contribution. There's very few people that are actually operating at 100%. Very few. But if we make it possible for more people to do that, then I think we'll actually see that. It is the restrictions that we have for ourselves, and there are restrictions that our current system has created to keep us from being able to do that. Heck, when I look at our infrastructure alone, we're putting in these things called roundabouts, which are permanent constrictions. If you don't understand what roundabouts do, it's called traffic calming. It is deliberately designed to slow you down and to inhibit your productivity. Wow. And they're getting away with it. They're slowing us down and they're constricting us more and more so that we become more dependent on them. We should be traveling 200 miles an hour now from point A to point B or in other modes and other means. But we don't innovate because they don't want us to innovate. They want to control us. And so anyway, I digress. And what I want to do is get into the Massachusetts debates and kind of cover, because that's what I started to do, in talking about this idea of having the energy and so forth so that the necessary powers are granted. And so let's go into the British coercion and more of his views on the importance of this Constitution, because he starts off with, hey, let's have an honest discussion about this before we completely out of hand reject this, so forth and so on. So go ahead and pick up here with, we got a couple minutes, I've got time to read the first paragraph, so let's pick it up from there. Thanks.
But I readily grant all these reasons are not sufficient to surrender up the essential liberties of the people, but do we surrender them? This Constitution has been compared both by its defenders and opponents to the British government. In my view of it, there is a great difference. In Britain, the government is said to consist of three forms, monarchy, aristocracy, and democracy, but in fact is but a few removes from absolute despotism. In the Crown is vested the power of adding at pleasure to the second branch, of nominating to all the places of honor and emolument, of purchasing by its immense revenues the suffrages of the House of Commons. The voice of the people is but the echo of the king, and their boasted privileges lie entirely at his mercy. In this proposed form, each branch of power is derived, either immediately or directly, from the people. The lower house are elected directly by those persons who are qualified to vote for the representatives of the state, and at the expiration of 2 years become private men unless their past conduct entitles them to a future election. The Senate are elected by the legislatures of the different states and represent their sovereignty.
Thank you so much. Sorry, I had a little cough there. Okay, so the next paragraph is going to be more than just a minute there to go through that. Okay, so but he's pointing out the differences between the House of Commons, and as a matter of fact, I think in Pennsylvania, was it the Pennsylvania debates? Or because we heard and we talked about the problems with the Commons and so forth. I don't think it was Massachusetts, was it? Do you remember? Where they talked about?
I think it was Pennsylvania.
Yeah, okay. So they're now to kind of just diving into some topics that you would think that they would have kind of covered before. But that's okay. But at least he's actually looking at, and he's giving people, I think, a logical argument in comparing and contrasting, you know, what they have in contrast to what they used to have out of Britain and how this is so superior, the checks and balances and so forth. So, and that's actually what he starts off with. He talks about the powers are a check on each other. So, in the next paragraph, so not to look around the corner, but there we go, folks. So with that, when we come back, that's what Sean will lead off with in talking about the advantages of this new system. And I dare I say, he recognizes the divine hand of providence in this. So anyway, with that, We will be back after this short promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so without, unless you've got a go back, Sean.
No, sir.
Okay, well then let's go ahead and plow forward with these checks. These powers are a check. Go ahead.
These powers are a check on each other and can never be made either dependent on one another or independent of the people. The president is chosen by the electors who are appointed by the people. The high courts of justice arise from the president and senate, but yet the ministers of them can be removed only upon bad behavior. The independence of judges is one of the most favorable circumstances to public liberty, for when they become the slaves of a venal, corrupt court and the hirelings of tyranny, all property is precarious and personal security at an end. A man may be stripped of all his possessions and murdered without the forms of law. Thus, it appears that all parts of this system arise ultimately from the people and are still independent of each other. There are other restraints which, though not directly named in this Constitution, yet are evidently discerned by every man of common observation. These are the government of the several states and the spirit of liberty in the people. Are we wronged or injured? Our immediate representatives are those to whom we ought to apply. Their power and influence will still be great. But should any servants of the people, however eminent their stations, attempt to enslave them, from this spirit of liberty such opposition would arise as would bring them to the scaffold. But admitting that there are dangers in accepting this general government, yet are there not greater hazards in rejecting it? Such is, Mr. President, the state of our affairs, that it is not in our power to carve for ourselves. To avoid the greatest and choose the least of the two evils is all that we can do. What then will be the probable effects if this Constitution be rejected? Have we not reason to fear new commotions in this Commonwealth? If they arise, can we be always certain that they shall be furnished with a citizen who, though possessed of extensive influence and the greatest abilities, will make no other use of them than to quiet the tumult of the people, to prevent civil war, and to restore the usual course of law and justice? Are we not in danger from other states when their interests or prejudice are opposite to ours? And in such scenes of hostile contention, will not some Sylla drench the land in blood, or some Cromwell or Caesar lay our liberties prostrate at his feet. Will not foreign nations attack us in our weak, divided condition and once more render us provinces to some potentate of Europe? Or will those powers to whom we are indebted lie quiet? They certainly will not. They are now waiting for our decision. But when they once see that our nation, our union is broken, and that we are determined to neglect them, they will issue out letters of marque and reprisal and entirely destroy our commerce. If this system is broken up, will 13 or even 9 states ever agree to another? And will Providence smile on the people who despise the privileges put into their hands and who neglect the plainest principles of justice and honesty? After all, I by no means pretend that there is complete perfection in this proposed Constitution. Like all other human productions, it hath its faults. Provision is made for an amendment whenever, from practice, it is found oppressive. I would add, the proposals which His Excellency hath condescended to lay before this honorable convention respecting future alterations are real improvements for the better, and we have no reason to doubt but they will be equally attended to by other states as they lead to common security and preservation. Some of the gentlemen in the opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. They have shown us the danger which arises from vesting magistrates with too much power. I wish they had gone on to tell the whole truth. They might have shown how nearly licentiousness and tyranny are allied. Who will not be governed by reason must submit to force. That demagogues in all free governments have at first held out an idea of extreme liberty and have seized on the rights of people under the mask of patriotism. They might have shown us a republic in which wisdom, virtue, and order were qualities for which a man was liable to banishment, and on the other hand, boasting, sedition, and falsehood, the sure road to honor and promotion. I am sorry that it had been hinted by some gentlemen in this house as if there were a combination of the rich, the learned, and those of liberal professions to establish and support an arbitrary form of government. Far be it from me to retort so uncharitable and unchristian a suggestion. I doubt not, but the gentlemen who are of different sentiments from myself are actuated by the purest motives. Some of them I had the pleasure to be particularly acquainted with and can safely pronounce them to be men of virtue and honor. They have, no doubt, a laudable concern for the liberties of their country, but I would beg them to remember that extreme jealousy and suspicion may be as fatal to freedom as security and negligence. With respect to myself, I'm conscious of no motive which guides me in this great and solemn question but what I could justify to my own heart, both on the bed of death and before the tribunal of omnipotence. I am a poor man. I had the feelings of a poor man. If there are honors and emoluments in this proposed Constitution, I shall, by my profession and circumstances in life, be forever excluded from them. It is my wish and prayer that, in the solemn verdict we are very soon to pronounce, we may be directed to that measure which will be for the glory, freedom, and felicity of my country.
So, what do you think? Good stuff, huh?
Yeah, I like that. It's very nice.
So, one of the things that I think is really, 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 I want to jump into first, is he talks about the independence of judges. And we talk a lot about that. And he says, the independence of judges is one of the most favorable circumstances to liberty. For when they become the slaves of a venal, corrupt court and the hirelings of tyranny, all property is precarious and personal security at an end. A man may be stripped of his possessions and murdered without the forms of law. Well, how is it that we've gotten to that point now? The point is it's not really the independence. And I say that what they did was they put in motion the ability for the court to be co-opted by academia and an ideology, in other words, godless secularism that literally creeped in, to where there's people that feel like they may have this, you know, this righteous indignation, you know, for sin or what have you. Because when we look even at some of Trump's appointments, they go to church, they claim to be Christian, or they're labeled, you know, and I'm okay with lumping a very large group of people Christians, because it's faith is a very individual thing. And if you're following Christ, then that's somebody that is Christian in a very generic sense. But my point is this, is that they go to school and they're being taught these principles and ideas that are literally outside the bounds of the Constitution. And those ideas have basically flooded, and this is why the Constitution and the courts have been making laws, and they've been literally taking us down all of these different paths and directions that are contrary to the Constitution. To me, this independence and life term for these appointments by the president has only proven that we are being basically, we are the victims of the ideology of academia and its influence over our courts. This is why I believe the courts must become representative. We need to convert our federal court system to a representative, to where the states are constantly vigilant in ensuring that the laws of the union and the sovereignty of the states are no longer trampled on, because it's been the courts that have been quick to trample on the rights of the states. It has been the courts that have been quick to trample on the rights of the people. And they've been colluding with the federal government off and on, and every once in a while they'll pull back a little bit, but they never do the right thing. And I would love to have a real honest conversation with Scalia if he was still alive. I'd love to have a real honest conversation with Clarence Thomas, because these men speak like they do really understand, but I've never heard them utter the words, our court has never been designed to force conformity. The court itself is to conform to the justice systems of each individual state. They were supposed to be able to maintain their own justice system. These are sovereign states. The Constitution required an amendment to take that away from the states. And thus, there was no way ever there was ever going to be an amendment to the Constitution to allow the federal government to do that. That's why it's not there. The courts had to assume these powers. And everybody had to be taught that it was okay, that the courts could do these things. And it all came from the hand of Hamilton. Anyway.
And I hate that guy.
So as he goes through here, this one part here, some of the gentlemen, because he calls out his fellow delegates for basically outright lying. And then out of respect, he basically says, I think some of these men were good men. I think that they were, they had good intent. I can understand, because he feels like he knows these men. But sometimes we have to acknowledge that where men are standing, you can't recognize that that's a good position. You have to get them to say, you're wrong. In their days, with the risk of a duel, men they tiptoed around each other so that they wouldn't have to face that ultimate, are you challenging my honor, my integrity? And I can see how back in those days it was a constraint. Either, regardless of how we've evolved as a society, we'd like to think that we've improved, but it seems like constraints seem to keep on coming up and keeping us from actually speaking boldly. Because bottom line, I don't think that these men that were speaking, ill about the Constitution as he was calling them out here. Some of the gentlemen in opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. They have shown us the danger which arises from vesting in magistrates with too much power. I wish they had gone to tell the whole truth. In other words, they were intentionally being deceptive. They might have shown how nearly licentiousness and tyranny are allied. He's giving them credit. There's a reason why they were intentionally deceptive. And so regardless of whether, we're all sinners and we all fall short and we all have our own problems, but we have to always expect to try to hold everybody, especially when you're in public office, you have to hold the line. That is the whole point, and that was the one thing missing out of this Constitution. If it was imperfect, it was imperfect because it was solely dependent on the honor and integrity of the men in service, men and women in service. There was no true teeth in the Constitution to say you are no longer eligible if you violate that oath. And is what a, you know, what an epiphany. I mean, talk about stating the obvious. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was literally stating the obvious, and it required a bloody, a massacre of life in the Civil War. Look at how many people had to die for them to finally say, you know what? We can't allow this anymore. We this nation was founded on very specific principles. The fruit that we are reaping is coming from our government. When government allows evil to persist, we should have abandoned slavery at the very beginning. When we allow these compromises, when government compromises our principles, when they compromise the fundamental laws that we should be holding dear, then government is the problem. And so we have to hold government, and we need to, and their intent was to clean things up. And that's what they tried to do with Section 3, with the entire 14th Amendment. They tried to clean up the state's behavior. They tried to do everything that they saw necessary to put this union back in the right direction. There's a lot of people that say the 14th Amendment was ratified under duress, and that, I believe, is a complete, it's intentionally deceptive. The Constitution gave Congress the power and the responsibility, not the power, but the role and responsibility of admitting new states into the union. And so when these states left, they had to come back in as new states. And so Congress had the authority to do what they did. And I'm so glad that the Constitution was written that way, because had they not had that, and Congress didn't have the sole authority of admitting states into the union, because bottom line, folks, Lincoln was wrong. Everybody that tells you can't leave, a state cannot leave, they can. And this is another fundamental principle, a fundamental principle that goes all the way back to heaven on contract law. When a contract is being violated, you are absolved of the obligations. And just like God is absolved when we violate our covenants, when we violate our obligations, or when we violate those things we've promised we will do. Anyway, and yet he loves us, and he's still is patient with us and blesses us and saves us from the next ruin when we promise we'll do everything good, and then we get up on our feet and go off to be a bad child again. It kind of reminds me of Groundhog Day when Bill Murray keeps on saving the kid and says, "You've never thanked me. You've never thanked me."
Love that movie.
Yeah. Anyway, Reverend Backus now talks about religious tests and speaks out against it and so forth and goes on. We got 10 minutes, so let's do this one right here. This is good.
Mr. President, I have said very little in this honorable convention, but I now beg leave to offer a few thoughts upon some points in the Constitution proposed to us, and I shall begin with the exclusion of any religious test. Many appear to be much concerned about it, but nothing is more evident, both in reason and the Holy Scriptures, than that religion is ever a matter between God and individuals, and therefore no man or men can impose any religious test without invading the essential prerogatives of our Lord Jesus Christ. Ministers first assumed this power under the Christian name, and then Constantine approved of the practice when he adopted the profession of Christianity as an engine of state policy, and let the history of all nations be searched from that day to this, and it will appear that the imposing of religious tests hath been the greatest engine of tyranny in the world. And I rejoice to see so many gentlemen who are now giving in their rights of conscience in this great and important matter. Some serious minds discover a concern lest, if all religious tests should be excluded, the Congress would hereafter establish popery or some other tyrannical way of worship. But it is most certain that no such way of worship can be established without any religious test. Much stir has been said about the importation of slaves into this country. I believe that according to my capacity, no man abhors that wicked practice more than I do. I would gladly make use of all lawful means towards the abolishing of slavery in all parts of the land. But let us consider where we are and what we are doing. In the Articles of Confederation, no provision was made to hinder the importation of slaves into any of these states. But a door is now open hereafter to do it, and each state is at liberty now to abolish slavery as soon as they please. And let us remember our former connection with Great Britain, from whom many in our land think we ought not to have revolted. How did they carry on the slave trade? I know that the Bishop of Gloucester, in an annual sermon in London in February 1776, endeavored to justify their tyrannical claims of power over us by casting the reproach of the slave trade upon the Americans. But at the close of the war, the Bishop of Chester, in an annual sermon in February 1783, ingenuously owned that their nation is the most deeply involved in the guilt of that trade of any nation in the world, and also that they have treated their slaves in the West Indies worse than the French or Spaniards have done theirs. Thus slavery grows more and more odious through the world, and as an honorable gentleman said some days ago, quote, though we cannot say that slavery is stuck with an apoplexy, yet we may hope it will die with a consumption, end quote. And a main source, sir, of that iniquity has been an abuse of the covenant of circumcision, which gave the seed of Abraham to destroy the inhabitants of Canaan, and to take their houses, vineyards, and all their estates as their own, and also to buy and hold others as servants. And as Christian privileges are greater than those of the Hebrews were, many have imagined that they have a right to seize upon the lands of the heathen and destroy or enslave them as far as they could extend their power. And from thence the mystery of iniquity carried many into the practice of making merchandise of slaves and souls of men. But all ought to remember that when God promised the land of Canaan to Abraham and his seed, he let him know that they were not to take possession of that land until the iniquity of the Amorites was full. And then they did it under the immediate direction of heaven. And they were as real executors of the judgment of God upon those heathens as any person ever was an executor of a criminal justly condemned. And in doing that, they were not allowed to invade the lands of the Edomites, who sprang from Esau, who was not only of the seed of Abraham, but was born at the same birth with Israel. And yet they were not of that church. Neither were Israel allowed to invade the lands of the Moabites or of the children of Ammon, who were the seed of Lot. And no officer in Israel had any legislative power, but such as were immediately inspired. Even David, the man after God's own heart, had no legislative power, but only as he was inspired from above, and he is expressly called a prophet in the New Testament. And we are to remember that Abraham and his seed for 400 years had no warrant to admit any stranger into that church, but by buying of him as a servant with money. And it was a great privilege to be bought and adopted into a religious family for 7 years and then have their freedom. And that covenant was expressly repealed in various parts of the New Testament, and particularly in the first epistle to the Corinthians, where it is said, quote, you are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And again, circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but keeping of the commandments of God. You are bought with a price, be not ye the servants of men. Thus the gospel sets all men upon a level, very contrary to the declaration of an honorable gentleman in this house that, quote, the Bible was contrived for the advantage of a particular order of men. Another great advantage, sir, in the Constitution before us is it's excluding all titles of nobility or hereditary succession of power, which had been a main engine of tyranny in foreign countries. But the American Revolution was built upon the principle that all men are born with an equal right to liberty and property, and the officers have no right to any power but what is fairly given them by the consent of the people. And in the Constitution now proposed to us, a power is reserved to the people constitutionally to reduce every officer again to a private station. And what a guard is this against their invasion of others' rights or abusing of their power. Such a door is now open for the establishment of righteous government and for securing equal liberty as never was before open to any people upon earth.
So another reverence view of this, the righteousness, or I should say, the recognizing the divine hand in the Constitution, kind of some interesting points. And as a matter of fact, it's interesting how he kind of points out the Jubilee kind of requirement of slavery that was, you know, that initiated slavery, you know, for a person to be bought and so forth. So, folks, reading this kind of gives you more of an unvarnished look of these men, what they understood, in contrast to how little we understand today. We've got 2 minutes left. So what we're going to do in our next episode is we're going to jump down to February 6th now, and we're going to cover Reverend Stillman's dissertation. Now, this is a long one, and this is where he literally kind of goes through, you know, one, two, three kind of things, why this Constitution, you know, rejecting this would be a moral travesty, and how he really looks and favors this Constitution. And again, he's a reverend, so he takes this spiritual view and so forth. And it's one of the very few debates where we find such that kind of paradigm, the way they're seeing this Constitution, more in this, I'll just call it this religious paradigm. And interestingly enough, the anti-federalists who are bringing forward, they're not making a very good religious paradigm contradiction, if that's making sense. In other words, they're more of a secular, just attacking the Constitution and saying, you know, instead of saying, you know, this is, you know, antithetical to what God would want us to do, because there's no argument that supports that. So it's kind of interesting what ends up happening. And actually, this Constitution, as it goes into ratification, won overwhelmingly both democratically as well as communal. And we'll get into that when we're all done. But anywho, any comments?
No, I thought it was good how he broke down that the he kind of put the kibosh on there using the scripture to justify slavery.
Right.
It's a pretty good argument. I never read that before.
Never knew that actually it came from not an emissary, but a member of the cloth in Britain that stood up and said, we are the worst nation of them all when it comes to slavery and the mistreating of people. And so anyway, there's a level of history that you will get out of the ratification debates in itself. And so I love the fact that, you know, it all kind of boils down to, you know, this what we need to do. And actually, let me just kind of go back to it. Well, I don't have time to go back to it. So what I'll do is there's the very last line, but American Revolution, that part. When we come back, folks, I'll reemphasize that to set the stage for Reverend Stillman, who will kind of wrap it up. Anyway, with that, folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.